I was in a coma for 6 weeks while the doctors told my wife I was going to die. When I woke up, she told me the most fantastic story. My team kept running the business without me. Freelancers reached out to my team and said, "We will do whatever it takes as long as Craig's in the hospital." I consider that the greatest accomplishment in my career. My name is Craig Andrews, and this is the Leaders and Legacies podcast, where we talk to leaders creating an impact beyond themselves. At the end of today's interview, I'll tell you how you can be the next leader featured on this show. Today, I want to welcome Philip Portman. He is the founder of TechStrip, the author of Three Keys to Success, and the host of the Success Is podcast. Philip is a serial entrepreneur who has had many ups and downs in his business, like any entrepreneur, but he has this fascination about what makes people successful, and that's part of his book of the Three Keys to Success. He owns a 54-acre horse farm, and my biggest regret is he and I have been talking for the last half hour, and we probably should have hit record a half hour ago. This is going to be a really great episode. Philip, welcome.
Hey, thank you for having me, Craig, and absolutely looking forward to this conversation with you.
Yeah. So I really do regret not hitting record. We were covering so much stuff. And one of the things we were just starting to talk on, I mean, clearly you've been very successful. You've done amazingly well. And it's so easy to look at that. I think Mark Cuban said, people remember me for my one or two successes. They don't know me for all the failures that led up to those. And you mentioned something about, you called it your summer of darkness.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes people see the top of the iceberg, but they don't see the stuff that happened underneath the water. Right. They don't see the times where you were struggling. And I had this summer, it was about a year into this restaurant delivery service franchise that I started. And I was all in on this. My partner comes to me and says, "Hey, I want out. I want you to buy me out. I want to leave. I want to go back to the corporate world." And it took everything I had to buy him out. In that same time, we found out that the marketplace insurance that we had for my autistic son was not paying, and we were paying about $6,000 a month for his ABA therapy, and then they just dropped us. My dog ended up, his stomach flipped, and I was at the vet, and they said, "Hey, we're going to see what's going on. It's going to be about $15,000 for the surgery."
Oh, my.
Me, who's massively in credit card debt, not a dollar to my name at that point, freaking out going, what's going to happen if I can't afford this? I got a wife and a son out there bawling in tears. I mean, we've had this dog since before the kids were born. Then they came back and said, "Unfortunately, the surgery's not going to help. We got to put your dog down." And in that moment, there was kind of a sense of relief that I didn't have to figure out where I was going to come up with these funds I didn't have. But at the same point, that was my lowest point. At that point, I thought, did I mess up my family's future? I left a comfortable six-figure job to pursue this entrepreneurship dream. And everything in that moment crumbled, and there was no hope for my future. That's the part that a lot of entrepreneurs don't like talking about, because it's traumatic. There's some PTSD that comes along with that. But if you dig deep and ask a lot of these successful entrepreneurs and say, "Hey, tell me about your low moment," they'll say, let me tell you about it. And then it's the coming out of that that's important. And for me, the way I got out of it was, when I had left my corporate job, I made a commitment to the universe. I said this out loud. I said, "This is the last time I will ever work for somebody else again." I said, So during the troubling times, I said, "Hey, I told myself this. And I have a North Star, and that's to spend more time with my family and my kids. That's what I want to do. That's what my future is. As long as I'm heading towards that direction, I know I'm on the right path. And then the second thing is when my back's against the wall, I work harder than anybody else out there. And so what started off as the summer of darkness ended with the launch of my business, and we ended up franchising it across six states. So we had massive growth by the end of that year, but it all started with the catalyst of me hitting that incredibly low point in my life.
You know, one of the misunderstandings, so I'm a marketer, one of the misunderstandings that people have is they think, oh, as a marketer, you need a blank canvas to be creative. I'm like, no, I need you to give me like some really tight constraints. Put me into this tiny little box that I can barely crawl out of. Do you think that's some of what happened at that time?
I think so. The problem with us humans, two problems. One, we limit our beliefs. We're far more capable than what we actually think. And so when you lift that off and say, hey, I have to figure out a way to do this, suddenly your brain's looking in all different directions for a solution to that. And so I think that's a big part of what happens when you get really compressed like that. In the marketing efforts, with me with marketing, I always looked at it like I needed to do things this certain way because that's the way marketers do it.
Yeah.
When you're in a tight box where you have to pull it off or you're dead in the water, you find a solution. And at the end of the day, that's what marketing's really all about. It's taking off of the barriers, taking off everything and saying, you know what works in marketing? The thing that works.
Yeah. And I think it forces you to go back and cut out crap that's not really performing. You know, there's some things, you know, something I run into, and I see that everybody universally knows they should be doing something on social media and they feel like they should be doing more on social media. And they come to me and they're like, Craig, what should you do? I'm like, I don't know. I suck at social media. I haven't cracked the code. I know two or three people that credibly think they have, but I'm like paid media. And the social media takes a ton of time. And so in those moments of scarcity, where are you going to use your time?
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I think there's aspects of well, there's so many different ways to market
Yeah.
nowadays. So many different avenues that you can market. And when you're pushed into a funnel or something that you have to do when your back's against the wall, you're not going to entertain the ideas that are not producing results. And if you have natural talents towards something, you're going to automatically gravitate towards that. Mine, and I'm probably dating myself, but back in the day, we were using Craigslist for advertising a lot of the businesses. And I don't know that it was moving more towards social media at the time than Craigslist, but Craigslist got us great results at the time. And so I gave up on the other strategies and just doubled down on the thing that was working during that summer and was just making phone calls and just grinding it out. And yeah, so I agree with you. I think if social media works for you, great, keep working on that. But paid ads, if it's email marketing, if it's text marketing, figure out what works and then build on that.
Now, your current business, TechStrip, isn't that a like a text marketing platform?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So TechStrip we built because most of the platforms that I was finding out there were very email centric. And then they kind of threw texting on there as an afterthought. Well, text messaging, when you're marketing, has a 45% response rate compared to a 6% with email. So we thought, well, if we look at the 80-20 rule, the 20% that's giving us 80% results, what if we really focused on the text messaging, text marketing? So instead of throwing it on there as an afterthought, let's build our entire platform around that, become the experts in it, and see what happens. And the results have been incredible. So for us, we do a completely free trial, no contract. because we know when businesses get on our platform and start using it, they're blown away with the results. And so that was the idea around TechStrip, and it's really taken off because people are able to take their same lead list or same strategy that they had for email, build it inside of a text campaign, and the results speak for themselves.
I guess one, let me ask some questions there. And just so you know, I'm doing nothing in text. I'm on HubSpot, and that's one of those platforms where it was like, oh yeah, we should probably do this, and it's a little bit of an upcharge. The thing I haven't gotten over in that is, I know with email, if you start spamming people with email, your emails are going to get buried. They're going to nobody's inbox. And I really worry about doing that with text messaging because I know if I don't opt into a text message, even the ones that I opt into, I'm a little bit annoyed when they show up. And I'm not
And
exactly.
texting is worse, right? Because emails you can kind of ignore, but text messages you can't, right? That's one of the things with, and why you have such a high response rate with texting is because if somebody is receiving a text message that they don't want to receive, there's an emotion around that, right? And you don't want to keep getting those text messages. So you're 100% right. Email and texting are different from that aspect. Email can you can do more of a cold outreach. With texting, it's a powerful weapon, but you have to use it correctly. So the way you want to use it is based on an interest or a promotion or something exciting where you're saying, right now, this is available in this moment, right? You're getting excitement, you're generating excitement around it. It's not designed for lead nurturing in most cases, like email would. Or information like email would. It's more for, hey, I need a quick response now, or I have this flash sale right now, or something that's going to get your attention immediately. That's really what texting is designed for. What you were talking about with the spam part, in 2019, they rolled out something for 10DLC, and it was regulations to prevent spam messaging with text messaging. And so now there's a lot of rules, there's regulations around it. And we became the absolute experts in that. We help when you come on board with us, you actually get a one-on-one interaction with a specialist who's going to help you create your campaigns, set up your account, understand how to use the platform, what to do, and what not to do. We pay for all of that up front. We give you free credits, there's no contract. We invest a lot in making sure that our customers are educated when they come onto our platform. Because if you don't get the results on our platform, since there's no contract, you're going to tell us to kick rocks. But if you get the type of results that our customers get from that platform, we can't even kick you off the platform. You're not going anywhere. You're going to stick with us because you're getting the results. And at the end of the day, that's what we're doing with our platform.
So let me ask you this. I mean, you probably gathered if, when I'm using HubSpot, I'm usually doing, B2B stuff. Often it's high ticket stuff. And you talked about using SMS for running specials. What would be the use case for higher ticket B2B using text messages?
Yeah, absolutely. And high ticket is really the best area to do it, especially if you have leads coming in from a website or something like that, right? Because you want to contact them immediately. Like if you contact a lead within 5 minutes, it increases your conversion rate by 900%, right? 900% in the first 5 minutes. Emails are kind of one of those afterthoughts. Like if you looked at your phone right now, how many unread emails do you have versus how many unread text messages do you have? Maybe you
No,
are
it's
really good about
no,
it
you're
now,
right.
but for me, I have like 50,000 unread emails in there. I have no unread text messages unless they came in during this call. Because as soon as you see them, you want to read them and you want to open them. So the benefit for a high ticket sales is as soon as somebody comes on your site and requests information, boom, you send out the message immediately. Because you're increasing your conversion rate. On top of that, the way that TechStrip works is we keep them on a drip campaign. And that's important because 80% of sales require five follow-ups or more. but 44% of sales agents give up after one attempt. So the benefit to text marketing is immediate messaging where it's in their face, they're seeing it immediately, and then continued drip campaigns. And we connect with platforms like HubSpot, all of your top CRMs we integrate directly with, or we have a Chrome extension that you can use that will connect with HubSpot or any of the other CRMs that you use if you want to use TextStrip for that matter. But our biggest thing is with our platform, you will have the best deliverability and highest response rate that you'll get out of any other texting platform out there.
You know, something you said a minute ago was about responding in the first 5 minutes and then also just giving up too soon. You know, and I see this unfortunately too frequently with my clients. You know, they're like, well, the leads are no good. I'm like, okay, well, one, how many times did you follow up with them? And two, how quickly did you follow up with them? And there was one client we finally looked at people they were able to book leads they were able to book calls with versus people they weren't able to book calls with. The number one thing that determined if there was a book call was the speed in which they followed up.
Absolutely. Yep. Speed is the number one benefit to text marketing is there is no other way to get to somebody faster. You could potentially argue if you had a push notification if they installed your app, but once again, nowadays apps can disable the notifications pretty quickly. Text
Yeah.
marketing is the fastest way to get to somebody directly.
No, and I mean, like Apple, you know, when they rolled out, I forgot which iOS version, where, you know, the easiest thing to do, they ask you, hey, do you want notifications from these guys? And I'm like, nope.
Nope. Yeah. And that killed it because back in the day, you remember everyone wanted an app. Every business wanted an app. You go to McDonald's, you go to your coffee shop, everyone wanted their own app because they wanted to be able to send notifications to you about promotions, deals. You know, in your situation, when you're doing high ticket sales, it's, hey, I've got a speaking engagement. Hey, I've got this. I'm going to be interviewing so and so on a topic that I think you're going to be really interested in. It's tonight at 7 o'clock. Jump on. You're going to want to see it live. Right? Or, hey, the biggest mistakes that marketers are running da, 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 in the age of AI, things like that, that you're getting to them instantly right then and there. Hey, I only have 20 spots available. Book yours now, right? Things like that, that you know those individuals are going to look for is really where text marketing is great for.
Yeah. How do you keep from being annoying?
Yeah. So, that goes back to how you're using it. So when you come on board with us, we're going to teach you how to use text marketing correctly and how not to use it. Most of the time, you are responding to an inquiry on your website or off of a lead nurturing process like an email. So somebody comes on, they request something, they immediately get put on a text strip campaign. We follow opt-out procedures with TextStrip, but not only do we follow opt-out from the keyword base, we actually built our own AI model that understands the intent of an opt-out. You never want to be in a situation where you're continuing to drip somebody who does not want to get messaging from you. That's the immediate way to break trust because they may not want to receive the text messages from you, but they may still want to get the email communication from you. So by respecting them on one area and still dripping them in the other, you can find that you're still going to still th work things out. But when you're messaging cold outreach on text messages, if you're just blasting out cold outreach that is not applicable to that person, that's the quickest way to burn a lead.
You know, another practice I've been seeing lately that I find really annoying is, you know, you go on somebody's website and based on your IP address, they're able to harvest your email. And
Yeah.
next thing you know, you're on their email list.
That's right.
And I've got websites. I like them. I like their message. I like what they're doing there. As soon as they show up in my inbox, I mark them as spam. I'm like, I never gave you permission. Never gave you permission to enter my inbox that way.
Same exactly. Yep. So once again, SMS powerful tool. But if you use it wrong, you could piss off the right customers. And I'd argue that same way, right? Like, I don't mind getting some ads. I know that that's paying for a lot of the services, but people that are directly sending me emails or text messages that I didn't ask for, that's a problem. So use it wisely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree with you more on that. The latest thing, I don't know if you're getting this, is the use with AI. So not only did I not subscribe to their messaging, but their AI is scraping every piece of information about me out there, combining it in a creepy email and sending it over. And it's like, could you imagine a human doing this? Hey, Phil, founder and CEO of blah, blah, blah. And it's talking about my whole journey. Oh, you own a 54-acre commercial horse farm. How's the weather there in Holly? Go Lions. You know, like it's just cheesy as hell. Clearly AI.
I see so many companies that are looking at AI and they're trying to push customer service over to AI. Oh, we can, and some MBA with their spreadsheet looking at saying, hey, we could cut this many customer service agents. And I can't explain it. I can't explain it, but I know for a fact, and I'll give you a proof point. That there's a human element that AI hasn't been able to replicate, and that
Yes.
human element is essential.
I
And
agree.
here's my proof point. The fact that OnlyFans is a viable business model
Yep.
tells me there's something that humans bring to the picture that's
Yes.
absolutely essential.
Yeah, because they could absolutely create all of that with AI.
They're not reciting Shakespeare, the dialogue's pretty simple.
No, I think you got a good point there. And for me, I'm almost looking for emails now that don't use M dashes, right? Emails that maybe have a aren't perfect because I know it came from a human. Yeah, I think more and more people in this age of AI are looking for human connection. I was looking on like LinkedIn, and you look at these posts that were clearly written by AI and then commented by bots and AI. And I had the thought that AI is just talking with AI at this point. Is there any humans out there? And I don't know. I think a lot of it's becoming bot-based because they're just casting out a big net and trying to market that way. My th thought is over the next few years, you're going to see people just getting burned out by this highly polished AI marketing world and looking for real, raw human connections.
So here's something funny, and this is a conversation going back to, I think it was 2018. And I'd written some emails, and I hand them off to one of my copywriters or one of my editors to review them. And she comes back and she's like, she corrects some things. There were some grammar errors, tense. And I looked at that and I was like, I like it better with the errors.
Yeah.
And so I had another copywriter. I said, hey, Shauna, will you look at this? And so Shauna looked at it and she's like, yeah, no, I agree with Libby. I think you need to fix these grammar errors. It'll make you look bad otherwise. And so I was like, all right, make it happen. I had two people, it was 2-1, two people on my team, both of them professional writers. I was like, okay, I may have this one wrong. Well, like a day later, Shauna came back and she's like, Craig, it pains me to say this, but you were right. I went through and I cleaned everything up. I gave it perfect grammar and it felt cold.
I think there's because it's not your voice, right? You lose your voice, it becomes cold. I agree. And I wonder if I'm sure somebody out there has done some split testing on that, you know, the polished version versus the kind of raw version. And same. And it's so easy now to have AI clean up your text or Grammarly or whatever you're using to clean up your text instantly. But I go through and read it and I go, that doesn't really sound like me.
And I think AI is an amazingly powerful tool, and I agree with everybody. I think this is as significant as the advent of the internet, the advent of the personal computer. But like each of those, I don't know, you may not remember. When the PC came out, one of the applications they were talking about for the PC was they said, you can store your recipes on your computer. And I always remember, I remember this. I mean, I grew up with a PC in the 80s, and I remember it was like, what part of the kitchen are you putting that computer in? What's going to happen when flour, you sprinkle flour on the computer? And but it was one of those things where they were looking for, they had a technology and they were trying to wedge applications into that technology that just didn't make sense.
Yeah, trying to force it.
And the thing that I think's made everybody excited about AI is, oh, hey, I've known I need to write, a blog a week or three blogs a week or whatever. Now I'm going to have AI do it. And they're missing the obvious fact of, guess what? The new noise level is mass quantities of AI written content. And so if you're doing that, you're just in the noise. And it doesn't matter if you're deep in the noise by not doing it or higher up in the noise, you're still in the noise.
And you're regurgitating a lot of the other stuff that's out there, and it's being trained on all that out there, and there's nothing differentiating you from everyone else in the market.
Yeah.
No, I agree. I think AI is a tool, and I think it's very useful, but you can't lose your brand's identity in it. Because then that's really what separates you and your company from everyone else out there. Because otherwise, what's preventing everyone else out there that has access to an AI bot or AI chat to do exactly what you're doing?
Yeah,
It's your voice, it's
exactly.
your brand.
Well, and I like your tool analogy because, I do woodworking and have some really, really nice Japanese chisels. Japanese chisels are just awesome. They're easy to sharpen and they just work really well. But it's not the chisel that makes the magic. The chisel's just the tool. I can mangle some dovetails with the best of them, and that Japanese chisel won't save me from mangling dovetails. What matters the most is the hand holding the tool.
You're right. Absolutely. It's the artist, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Heard that about guitarists too. Some of the greatest guitarists, they said it didn't matter what they played on. You could hear them in that guitar. It didn't matter the settings, whatever. They had a way to make that sound the way they wanted to. Their voice basically still came through in that, whatever the guitar was. Didn't matter if it was a cheap or expensive guitar or what the setup was. And I'm sure there's good guitar enthusiasts out there that are saying, no, you're wrong. You got to have this type of wood, this type of fretboard, and all that. But the amazing guitarists out there, the ones that we know their signature sound, I've heard that they could pick up anything and you could still tell it was them.
Wow. Yeah. Hey, I want to make sure we cover one thing. Let's talk about your book, Your Three Keys to Success. So, for those that are listening, he's holding up Three Keys to Success. What's that about? What's your book about?
Yeah, so I've been fascinated with the idea of success.
Yeah.
Your story is about incredibly intelligent, high IQ individuals not achieving their version of success or what society deems as success versus other people who consistently find success, but there's nothing really different about them. Also, when you look at the internet in this day and age, you get what the internet tells you is success. And I was always thinking, well, maybe I have a different definition of success, but my version of success is not a fancy car looking flashier than the neighbor next to me. What is success? And so I started a podcast interviewing people and would hear what their version of success was. People that were entrepreneurs, authors, hedge fund managers, heads of nonprofits, stunt women, actresses, actors. And I asked them, what is success? What, how do you define it? And then what steps did you take in your life to achieve your version of success? And there were some similarities that I'd pull out time and time again. And so I distilled it into my three keys to success. And these are things that I've taken from my own life that in my own experiences. I talk about my own story growing up as raised by a single mother, one of seven children, to becoming a multimillionaire and I talk about my strategies for how I achieve that throughout my life. But I also talk about some of the strategies that I've taken from guests and people that I've spoken to throughout my life. And we distill that into it. Now, the thing I'll tell you about this book is this is not a book that you can just read and then throw on a shelf and go, oh, that was a great book. There is work material in here and it is difficult. But if you go through this work inside this book and work through it, it will change your life. If you're somebody who keeps kind of hitting this ceiling, just keeps struggling, feel like you're on a treadmill, if you go through the exercises in this book, it will change your life. So the three keys to success, you can pick it up on my website, philportman.com, and just click the link and purchase it right from there.
So high level, what are the three keys?
Yeah, so three keys. The first one is written goals, having clearly written goals. Most successful people I talk to have written down these goals. And here's some data points on it. If it's written, you're 33% more likely to achieve it just by writing it down. If it's written and shared with somebody, you're 76% more likely to achieve the goal. And then if it's written, shared, and you can visualize yourself achieving it. So you can visualize the steps that you're taking to achieve your goals. You can actually see yourself achieving it. You are 140% more likely to achieve that goal. So the first one is having clearly written goals. And we go through an exercise on how to help you figure out what your goal should be in life. I talk about some different buckets. So you're not just focusing on financial or career goals, but you're also focused on family goals, artistic goals, lifestyle goals. So you're living a well-balanced life. So the first one is having clearly written goals. The second one is establishing healthy habits while killing bad habits. And I'll tell you right off the bat, one of the worst habits is this thing right here, my cell phone. This thing's like Pavlov's dog, right? Every time the bell rings, you start salivating. So many people ended up just wasting their time on this box. If you were to go back in time and tell your ancestors, I'm going to give you this magic glass box you're going to have in your pocket, and you will have access to all of the world's information. It can answer any question immediately for you, solve any problem that you're thinking about, answer anything. What would you do with it? And they'd say, oh my God, that type of magic, I'd be able to achieve anything, right? And it can be a great tool, but you have to offset all of the addictive natures that it can do.
And you know, there was a book called, oh, what was it? I forgot the name of it, but it talked about the addiction cycle that they build into it. And it's basically four processes. You have to have a prompt, you have to have a variable reward, you have to have a, wow, it's been a while since I read that. You had to have investment, and you had to have action. So those are the four things. You have prompt, you have action, you have investment in the future, and you have a variable reward. And those four things, if you look at all these apps, whether it's Facebook or TikTok or Instagram or whatever, they all engineer that in there to make their app addictive.
Yeah. And so you're fighting with this. Your nervous system is being hacked to just be staring at this screen every time you get a notification. I've had notifications turned off on my phone for over 2 years. Every notification. If you call me right now, it will not ring. Do not make me your emergency contact. But on the flip side, if you talk to successful people, they develop really great habits. One of them, I have on my podcast, I can say, what book are you reading right now? And usually they can pull it out from a shelf and say, hey, this is the book I'm reading, right? 42% of college graduates never read a book again.
Oh, wow. Oh, my goodness.
Whereas the top CEOs in the US read roughly one book a week, 52. So there's a direct correlation between some of these healthy habits like reading and exercising. And we talk a little bit about that in the book. So the second one is killing the bad habits and building healthy habits. And then the third one I call arrogant confidence. And what arrogant confidence is this level of confidence that's just above your level of confidence. And I see it time and time again from successful people. They almost put on this hat of confidence that to an outside person and even themselves seems a bit arrogant. Like, I can't, oh, to do that? I couldn't just do that with myself. No, but you put on this hat of arrogant confidence and you can do it. And for me, it was, who am I to franchise a company? I didn't even go to college, right? McDonald's, who do I think I am, right? And I went out there and franchised this company. Who am I to own a business overseas in India? Like, who am I to do that, right? And yet I went through and did it. And you talk to these people and these massive buildings they've built, these companies that they've done, the things that they've achieved in their life, and every one of them will say, yeah, I had that moment of self-doubt, but I just put on this hat of confidence and moved forward and just did it and did that big risk thing, took that big leap of faith, jumped, and then the net presented itself, that sort of thing. And we talk about that in the book as well. So those are the three keys to success and a high-level overview.
I get it. I mean, that makes so much. I like the simplicity of it because it's easy. I look at a lot of frameworks and they get overwhelming. And I love the simplicity of that framework. And on that arrogant confidence, the most exciting period of my life was the first 6 months after I left the hospital and had to learn how to walk again. And New Year's morning, 2022, I'm having breakfast with my wife. I'm sitting in a wheelchair. And if I was sitting at that point in my recovery, if I was sitting, I didn't have oxygen on. If I was standing, I had to have extra oxygen. And I looked at my wife that morning, New Year's morning, 2022, and I said, 2 weeks from today, I'm going to Camp Gladiator, which is a outdoor fitness thing.
Wow.
I can attest to what you're saying because what was going on at that period of my life, I would set some crazy goal that I thought would take, like a month to achieve, and I'd hit it in a week.
Yeah.
And I was like, crap, now I need another goal. And so I'd set another goal that I thought would take another month to achieve, and I hit it in a week. And it's that, just doing the crazy thing that normal, sane, rational people would never do.
Absolutely. The goal thing is really interesting. I had this whiteboard and I would work out and I'd write my workout goals on it. And when I started my entrepreneurship journey, I started writing business goals on it, things that I wanted to achieve in business and finance right on it. And I started writing these things out and I would put a date on that. So I put, what I was trying to achieve and the date on it. And consistently, I kept hitting these. And I was blown away by it. So I started really writing these stretch goals out on that. And I kept hitting them and kept hitting them. I was telling my wife about this. She's, like, yeah, okay, we'll see if this works out. So I said, try right now goals. My wife's an author. So she wrote out a goal and she said, on this day, this year, this is what I want to hit, blah, 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 and stuff. Day one of the new year, she hit this goal. And she said, I don't know what it was. I don't even know how it happened. But day one, she hits this goal, and she's forever since been a believer in writing down your goals. And it's amazing. But I hear it time and time from people. They'll say, I set a goal. I thought it was a crazy goal, but I wrote it down. I started talking about it with other people. We started really planning around that goal. Somehow we hit it every single time. So
Wow.
try it out if you haven't done it. It sounds crazy, but somehow it works.
Yeah. Well, Philip, this has been great. So your book is The Three Keys to Success. I'm assuming you can get that on Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. Anywhere, Amazon, Barnes and Noble, any of the stores out there, it's available on any of the retailers where you buy books, you can buy it from.
And your podcast is Success Is, and it's a podcast about where you interview successful people and figure out what helped them get successful. And lastly, how can people, and your company is TechStrip, how can people reach you?
Yeah, so if they go on to philportman.com, you can follow me, any of the social media websites, Phil Portman, you can look me up. For your guests listening, if you do sign up through TechStrip, just let customer service know that you listen to this podcast. And not only will you get a free trial, not only will you get one-on-one consultation with somebody who will help you set up the best campaign you've ever used. We will give you 3,000 free credits just for listening to this. So you can take 3,000 of your leads or contacts, run them through TechStrip and try us out free of charge. We'll pay for your campaign registration fee through 10DLC and everything else for you to try it out, just to check out how well TechStrip does for you. And if you want to buy the book, it's available on philportman.com as well.
Phil, this has been awesome. Thank you for coming on Leaders and Legacies.
Yeah, thank you for having me, Craig.
This is Craig Andrews. I want to thank you for listening to the Leaders and Legacies podcast. We're looking for leaders to share how they're making impact beyond themselves. If that's you, please go to alliesforme.com/guest and sign up there. If you got something out of this interview, we would love you to share this episode on social media. Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone who would be a great guest, tag them on social media and let them know about the show, including the hashtag Leaders and Legacies. I love seeing your posts and suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss anything, please go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me. It means a lot to my team. If you want to know more, please go to alliesforme.com or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.